This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Welcome to Insta Poetic Justice, the first podcast of its kind discussing the ever-evolving terrain of poetry and technology and how these two have merged together to create the subgenre that is Insta Poetry. Here I will interview poets about poets as we weigh in on the positives and negatives of this new literary phenomenon. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mare. You can check out my poetry books at www.paganpoetess.com. Supporting me via my published works is the best way to ensure all these podcasts remain free and accessible to everyone. And now, on with the show. Welcome back, poetry lovers. This is another episode of Insta Poetic Justice. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mare, and today I am delighted to announce that we are joined by the best-selling poet, Cheryl Churchill. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello, Amy.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. It's such a delight to have you.
Oh, it's great. I'm great. Glad to be here.
Of course. So, again, I pulled a little bit from your Amazon bio. C. Churchill is a writer from the Midwest with about 57,000 followers on Instagram at the time of this recording. She has a master's degree in secondary education and teaches visual arts. Writing and art have been her passion from a very young age. All of the art and photography in her books was created by her. She has always felt the need to create as purely as possible by transforming blank pages into a canvas of thought. In love with nature, she hikes in her beautiful state of Michigan, never without a camera and notebook. Oh, I can relate to that because, you know, especially in quarantine, like that's the only thing really my husband and I do. We, you know, go hiking in the Midwest. And do you know Lake Monroe in Indiana?
I do not.
It's the largest lake in Indiana, and it's, you know, it's huge, and, you know, they have tons of, like, hiking trails around it, so there's this one trail that my husband and I go on, and, like, it's literally hiking 6.7 miles in 2 hours. It's intense, but the scenery is so beautiful.
That sounds gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm basically living underneath the Mackinac Bridge right now.
Oh, okay. So,
on Lake Huron and Lake Michigan.
Oh, nice. And of course, in addition to the book that I have of yours, Petals of the Moon, C. Churchill is also the author of five other poetry collections, including Wildflower Tea, Raven Moon, Mirror Mirror, Chasing Pines, and Racing Ravens. And I gotta say, I just love the title for your collection, Raven Moon.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I had a fan fiction I was writing where a character had, like, a pet, like, direwolf, and I called the direwolf Raven Moon. So I'm just like, when I saw that title, I'm just like, oh.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to tie them all kind of together and have it be a nice collection and just keep going with it.
Yeah, and I was reviewing the publication dates on Amazon. A lot of these are from 2019 and 2020, right?
Yeah, I actually have two more books that I released before this six, mm-hmm. And they're actually out right now. I bring them out on the holidays mm-hmm. and special times. I published my first one in August of 2017, mm-hmm. and it was my first adventure into self-publishing, and I didn't know what I was doing, so I made it full-color photography in an 8x8-inch book. And then realized after the fact that that was going to cost me a lot of money. So it's almost $20 for a little paperback, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But it's special and it's nice and it's, you know, color photography and it's pretty nice. And then I did actually my second book is called Color Body Feels, and I release that one every so often. And it's 365 days of writing prompts because I actually did a poetry challenge on Instagram. For 17 months straight.
Wow.
So, yeah. It got to be a little too much when I was reading, like, between 80 and 100 poems a day every single day. And I finally had to call it quits because it was, like, I didn't want to just not read people's stuff. But it, and then I'd be feeling like a little fake about it. So I was like, okay, I'm getting to the point where I can't handle reading this many a day, every single day, and write books. And at this time I was getting my master's degree. So I was like, no, I'm like, cause I cut it off, but then I put it into a book. So
that's available
around the holidays as well.
And just to clarify, are all your collections self-published or did you traditionally publish any of them?
All of them are self-published.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So let's dive right into the questions. So again, you have a substantial following on Instagram. So for you, what was the first thing that happened? Was it Instagram or writing a physical book when it came to your poetry?
I was in a weird place that I needed a creative outlet because I was doing school and I was like, I don't know what to do. And I needed some kind of break because I have a master's degree in education. And I was like, I need some creative break. So I liked writing. And I didn't even know about Instagram, really. I did some photography, like shared photography on there a little bit. My sister had it. And I was like, what is this Instagram? Blah, blah, blah. So then I started writing. And traditional, like my first attempt at it, I didn't even sign my name. I just did some little typewriter. I got a vintage typewriter and did some little typewriter pieces and just posted them. I didn't know anything about hashtags. I didn't know anything about pretty much anything. So I did that for about 4 months. And then I was like, I'm going to start. And then I started like, you know, skipping days. And I'm like, I really want to dedicate to do this every day. And I started the Color Body Feels Challenge. And my account kind of grew from there.
Okay.
More and more people got interested in doing the challenge. And then 17 months later, I had a pretty big following. I mean, just from doing the challenges and reading other people's work and meeting other poets. And I really came out of my shell. Not only with writing, but like meeting new people because, you know, I came from a crowd of friends that no one was a poet. Mm-hmm. No one knew anything about poetry. Like, so it was pretty awesome.
Wonderful. And then, so how did publishing your first collection change your process of writing?
Well, I kind of touched on it. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. And I put out a book that was way too expensive. And then I started buying other people's books. That was like, not before, but after my first one went out, I was like, okay, what do other people's books look like? How do they format? What are they, you know, what are they doing with formatting that I can do different? Because how can they sell their book for $9? I don't know. Like, I just was like mystified. So I was like, okay. So I started doing some research because, you know, I'm a school nerd and that's where I live is in research. Researched all the poetry I could from new poets because I had only ever really been exposed to what people were writing for daily prompts and traditional like poets like Emily Dickinson and stuff in Poe, and I'm like, I had no idea what this new poetry was about. So I got a whole bunch of books, did a whole bunch of research, and realized that the shorter pieces on Instagram get read really, really well because it is a click photo format, like, so, you know, platform. So I was like, okay. So that changed my writing style quite a bit in the fact that I make sure to include at least like 4 or 5 short pieces in my books so I can take photos of the actual physical book and put them on Instagram and have them be seen. But I love writing longer pieces, you know. So those don't make it to Instagram usually. They hang out in my books. And plus Instagram's free. So I figure if you're going to buy the book, you might as well get your money's worth with a whole bunch of poetry instead of a whole bunch of like 3-line things.
Right. Yeah. Jay Edgehard, you know, when I interviewed him, said something similar. He's kind of adopted the format of, I don't think he really so much takes pictures of his actual book. I think he has one collection right now. But he will only put like 2 lines on Instagram. But it's not just 2 lines, like the whole poem is in his collection.
Yeah, it's definitely hard because you want, like, especially with a 2-page, because, you know, you're going to be like zooming in on your screen when people to read that is such a pain for them. You know, they're not going to take that challenge. Obviously, some people will, but, you know, or I'm going to have to swipe slide to get this whole poem. And it's just a lot. So Facebook actually is much friendlier with longer pieces.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I wouldn't call my poetry particularly long, but I just always felt I could gain better traction on Facebook than I could with Instagram, but that's just me.
Actually, my Facebook account went crazy. My Instagram's just been losing. It's just like I lose 100 followers a week, and there's no way to gain them back. I have no idea what they're doing, but it's fine. But yeah, my Facebook page is up to 86,000 followers.
Oh, nice.
So it surpassed my Instagram, and I've only been doing the Facebook one for like a year and a half. So I really don't know. I'm like, whatever. I'm not even going to try to make sense of the algorithms anymore. I just do what I want, post when I want, and leave it at that.
Yeah, nice. So you touched upon this a little, like going into my next question. Do you do any research for your collection? Like you talked about that you did, that you got a lot of books, like seeing what other people were doing, particularly in terms of style and especially formatting and how they could get their books just for $9.99. But is there any other research that you take into account when you start a collection?
You know, I'm very mathematical about it, and I'm very big into theme, outlines, like how I want the book set up, how many pages, how many pieces I want to be, long pieces, short pieces, medium pieces. I like do the math first.
Right.
And then create the collection. And I know I work totally backwards than most people, but I'm kind of a math and science nerd as well as an art and writing nerd. So I really like there to be a good flow. I don't want like five short pieces in a row and then five long pieces in a row. Like to me, that disrupts the whole reading of the book.
Interesting. Yeah, I could say I can relate to that a little bit because, you know, I've got a series, the Haunted Relics series that I've started, and I'm not quite as meticulous as that, but like I'll write like 70 to 100 poems for like each collection. And then, but I do take into consideration, like when I put them in order, I don't want so many long poems, like consecutive to each other and just like spacing them out. But I do that after I've already written all the poems.
Yeah, it's, and plus, I mean, and I have, you know, obviously I write constantly, so I have notebooks and notebooks and notebooks full of poems that I just write all the time. So I will literally have that, my outline, and I have my sections, I have my theme, and I'm like, okay, I'm looking for a medium piece, like, and for Petals of the Moon, I'm like, I'm looking for a medium piece that would go under the new moon section. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I know I wrote one like that. I know it's in one of these books, and I'll sit there and I'll find it, and I will, you know, rewrite it and do the final edits of it and all that. So yeah, it's
nice.
I think it's fun. I know people get really stressed, and it is kind of stressful self-publishing, because as soon as you hit that live button, it's like kind of crazy. You're like, oh, everyone's gonna read my words in the whole free world, and it's insane. And I don't know. I think it's fun too, though. Like, it's super exciting.
Yeah, no, I just wish I had notebooks full of poetry. I've gotten to the point where I've kind of, you know, depleted all the poems that I had, like, from my childhood and stuff. And so now when it comes to publishing my next collections, like, I have to create most of it from scratch. Which, in a way, is not too bad, because certainly 2020 has given me a lot to think about and to write about.
Yeah. Yeah. I have, like, three different book ideas in the works, but I just, like, I released Mirror Mirror and I released Raven's Moon so close together, like, a month apart. But I wanted those. I didn't want, just in case things got really bad this winter, knock on wood, they're not as bad as I think they're going to be. I wanted those to be done for people to have access to them if they were in lockdown.
Right.
Like if things got worse, I'm like, well, you know, I just want to get these done, get that stress gone. I want to create art all winter. I'm working on a children's book and doing all the illustrations in it. So that's my fun side project that I'm working on this winter.
What is your children's book about?
I'm not telling anyone.
Okay.
It's a surprise.
Okay. It's a surprise.
It has something with children not forgetting the magic of creating and making mistakes and still loving their work.
Oh, that's cute. I just started laughing because when you said children's books, what I immediately thought of was there was this parody that Samuel Jackson did where he's like, with the children's book, it's like, and it's called Stay the Fuck at Home.
Yep.
Yes.
What would we do without our artist, man? We definitely wouldn't be laughing as much.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So, again, I have to rephrase this question because you are self-published, not traditionally published. So, like, you know, Petals of the Moon, like, you've sold quite a fair number of copies of those, haven't you? I remember you, like, putting a few posts about it on Instagram.
Yeah, I got named by the Book Authority of the top 100 best-selling poetry books of all time. And I think I'm, like, 45th on the list, which is kind of like, what? And I've sold over 15,000 copies in the past year and a half.
Nice, wonderful. So in light of that, like, you know, this question was originally phrased, what did you do with your first advance, or in your case as being self-published, what did you do with your first sizable, like, royalty?
It's so hard because it's like, I just live off of it. This is my full-time job.
Yeah, so you are writing full-time at this point?
Yeah, like, I pay my rent and buy food and gas and books, and this is what I do. And royalties pay for all my living expenses.
Oh, wonderful. Don't we all wish we could get to that point?
Well, you know, funny story, right before I released Petals of the Moon, I had a really hard decision to make. I was working at a very uncomfortable position in a K-8 in Flint, Michigan, where I was completely unhappy. And I had to make the decision, because some of my students were very scary, to either stay on or quit. And I decided to quit my job. I quit my job in January, and I started writing Petals of the Moon in January, and I released it in March, and all of a sudden it started taking care of me.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful way to, at least, again, you know,
and, like, no, a one very likes- serendipitous moment in my life to release that book. And, you know, right after I decided to leave my career, and yeah, so it's been an interesting, past year and a half.
Yeah, no, I can totally understand that, because my mom was kind of in a similar position. She was in a high school, but, you know, K-12. And again, just demanding things of her that you know, just weren't reasonable. And again, as like you said, the students were also getting kind of scary. And, you know, as a middle-aged woman, my mother was not in a position to, like, control them physically in that way. And so she eventually, you know, retired.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, when fights break out in your room and you can't do anything about it, you have to call for security and you have to wait. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
I had 650 students because I was the visual arts teacher. And, you know, you spend no time with them because you're in an elementary. So it's like they get to see you for 35 minutes once or twice a week. And what are you really teaching them by the time you settle them down and get them in their seats, and then they have to line up to leave and clean up. So, you know, you only get like 17, 18 minutes of teaching time and work time combined. And it was just, I was like, that's not what I signed up for. I'm like, I want to actually be a teacher of the arts and, you know, spend time with students and, you know, teach them about the creative process and how to share their art and, you know, not to be afraid and instill confidence. And there was just, in 17 minutes, how do you do that?
Yeah, not really. So,
but on to better things. I mean, I'm still looking to, you know, in some way do that. I want to start an after school program up here. I was going to do it, but 2020 happened because they don't have arts where I live. So I want to start a whole K-12 after school and get some grants to start an art program up here.
Oh, like a 503, like nonprofit?
Yes.
Oh, nice. I used to work for one, but yeah,
very good. But yeah, I want to do visual arts and writing, and creative writing.
Oh, wonderful. Good luck with that.
Thank you. I want to give back. I want to, you know, do something for the community.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, just sad, you know, just with the whole, again, because of my mom, I'm very familiar with, again, the flaws of the K-12 system. And naturally, when budget cuts happen, you know, the arts are, you know, usually one of the first things to go.
Yes, they are on the chopping block, always.
Yeah, they are always on the chopping block first, and it is such a pity. So, but we digress. So, next question I had was, do you read your book reviews, and how do you deal with bad or good ones?
I have a couple bad reviews. I know that sounds awful, but it's true. Like, I have a couple, and I do not go to Goodreads at all because, I don't know, there's like a weird cult experience on Goodreads where there's a whole bunch of people that are not real reviewers, and it's a very mean girl gang up type situation. Like, one person will like not like your thing, and then they're all their friends in their group will come not like your thing, and they haven't even read it. So Amazon reviews are, I think, are a little better just because it says verified purchase.
Yeah.
And you know the person bought the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't go to Goodreads anymore because several poets I know, we've talked about this, where it's like, it's just kind of gotten to be very toxic. So I don't even go there. So there could be thousands of reviews that say my stuff is horrible, but I don't really care because I'm not reading them.
Yeah, no, I can kind of understand. I'm slowly starting to get that preliminary impression of Goodreads as well, because I have started to get into BookTube, and a lot of people, like a lot of the rhetoric I'm hearing is that, you know, you have to get into like Goodreads. But yeah, I think especially in BookTube, like the book videos, like in book reviews that gets the most hits are the ones who are being funny, like ranting about a book saying how awful it is. And I just don't want to really do, I don't want to do that as the sort of culture of my channel. But even me, I have a 1-star review. One of the few reviews I have on my my debut collection, The Ghost in the Locket, someone just put a 1-star and they didn't say anything like why they didn't like it. And I'm just like, screw you.
I have some weird 1-star ones, and it's all about packaging and shipping, which I find really funny because that's not my fault. I do not say, popular belief may think that I sit here and print books out of my apartment. I do not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Kindle Direct Publishing actually makes the books and Amazon ships them.
Right.
So I have no control over if there's a fingerprint on the cover or if it's late. Like, I have a 1-star review from a guy that said it was, he didn't even want to read it because it was so late, and he would give it 0 stars or something. And I'm like, okay. Well.
Yeah, no, I don't get that. Like, you know, when I review books on Amazon, it's specifically about, you know, the content of the book.
Exactly.
Like just today, for Christmas, my husband got me the really nice illustrated edition of Game of Thrones, of Song and Ice and Fire series. And so, but one of them, the Clash of Kings book, like the pages are like ripped out of the spine. And so I'm not going to go on, you know, Amazon and basically give J.R.R. Martin a 1-star review saying my book was
right,
damaged.
That's when you contact Amazon and say, hey, Amazon, can you send me a new book? I'll send you the damaged one back. And they
I'll just replace it. Like the only time I would write a review about like the physical condition of a book, if it was like a classical book where it's obviously not about the content because it's a classic that has withstood the test of time, like that's the only time I would write.
Right.
Like if I would talk about a specific edition of really classic literature, I wouldn't do that with modern writers.
Yeah, it's a little, I've gotten some bad reviews on some books because of quality of printing and quality of packaging. And I'm like, the majority aren't like that. Like, Wildflower Tea, I think, has 200 reviews, and Petals just hit 600 reviews, and both books are over 4.5 stars. So the bad reviews are really few and far between.
Yeah. All right, then. Next question. Do you ever Google yourself?
I actually had some crazy-ass person message me on Facebook to my personal account, and she said I was going to get whatever, I don't know what it's called, where they release all your private information. And I was asking a friend about it, my brother's friend, who's like a super awesome computer guy. And he's like, just Google yourself. And I'm like, yeah, good idea. So I just Googled myself to actually see what personal information's out there, because I haven't done that in a while. And there's nothing. I mean, at this point in my life, I'm like, well, what can they really know? I pretty much live on social media, and what you see is my life. So I'm not really hiding anything.
Mm-hmm.
I Googled myself last year at this time. I found someone released my book under their name on a pirated site, which was fine. I got a hold of the company right away. They removed the listing right away. There was nothing, like, it was fine. Most incidences like that happen are, the company has no idea. They just don't have enough checks and balances in place. And
yeah, they don't have the manpower to inspect
everything.
They're
really happy to remove anything if you know, I'm an actual writer and this is, you know, crazy. So yeah, they're pretty good about it.
Oh, that's good. So next question, what was the best money you ever spent as a writer?
Ooh, the best money
I ever spent. What was like your best investment?
I would have to say my first vintage typewriter.
That's what a lot of poets have said. I had another poet I interviewed where she invested in the vintage typewriter.
And it's like, funny because the investment for me was only, I think, I got it at the Goodwill, and I think it was $8.
Mm.
And I was like, you know, I could do some fun arts and crafts with this. And that led me into doing small pieces of poetry and like kind of making it artistic with like I coffee stained old pages and did some cool stuff. And that led me to, hey, let's put this on Instagram, because I was already doing photography on my other account. And I was like, let's have fun with it and see what people think of my writing. And so that would be my best investment, because that started all of this.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting, that contrast, because again, you know, several poets, you know, have said like what they really love is that their vintage typewriter that they have. And it's just interesting because you're using the aesthetic of such an old technology, but it's a marriage with Instagram, which is an entirely brand new technology. So well,
you should have seen the shock on my face, because, okay, like I started writing on Instagram in what, like 2015, 2016. I had no idea that there was such a thing as Instagram poetry. I had no idea. I was on it for the photos, and I was like a food porn junkie. And I was like, oh my God, look at these restaurants. Look at this food. And then I would post pictures of like sunsets and nature, because that's what I do. And like, look at other photographers. I had no idea that poetry existed online.
Mm-hmm.
Not anything like it. Like, I had no idea. And I was like, huh. Because like I said, I didn't even know what hashtags were. I'm just posting to post, and changed into a crazy dance of social media, where now I'm like, oh well, I just spent like 4 years of my life being on social media like 10 hours a day. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've scaled back a lot, because it was like 3 years in a row where I was doing it like 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you know, people ask, how'd your account get so big? How do you sell so many books? How do you do this? How do you do that? I'm like, persistence, engagement, and it's not a walk in the park.
No, and you have to, like, it's like me. I am a, you know, I have a daytime job, which I enjoy. It's what I went to school for, and I'm really good at it. But I, you know, I understand the reality that it's going to take, you know, 5+ years to even get some semblance of a platform when it comes to like writing.
It's not that easy. And, you know, there's people that started 3 weeks ago that messaged me, and they're like, how do I gain as many followers as you? And I'm like, well, be here longer than 3 weeks. And instead of messaging people and asking them to share your work, how about you follow them and start engaging with them and start talking to them?
Or do a podcast and engage with the whole sphere.
Exactly. Like, it's so like, people are like, share me. And then they're like, not even following you, never seen their account before. And I'm like, why would I do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just tacky, I think.
Again, I would never feel comfortable with doing that. Like,
and
you
it's
know,
hard because, you know, you don't want to not reply, but not replying is sometimes better, because some people get really crappy with you when you say, you know, like I always say, well, I do share people, but not very often. And they're people that have been engaged with my account for a long time. And it's just, you don't want to say that and then have them come back and be rude. So sometimes messages don't get answered.
Yeah, that's just a part of, you know, the game. Like, you know, there's tons of poets that I reached out to who did not respond to me, and I'm not smart enough not to, like, you know, go nasty on them. But I like to think, at least with this podcast, I'm contributing something substantial that both the poet and the people and the people who enjoy poetry and other poets will enjoy all together. So I like to think.
I'm glad I got your message, because I don't even check messages on that account like ever. And it was so random. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, what is this? And I'm like, oh wow. I'm like, okay, that sounds fun. But I have like 7 Facebook accounts.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I have the Petals of the Moon, I have Wildflower Tea, I have Wild Wondrous Words, I have Raven's Moon, I have CC Writes, and I have C. Churchill, which is my art page.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like, there's a lot going on with that, and it's just started picking up. So I'm like, I'm just kind of starting to pay attention to Facebook, where I didn't really pay attention before, even at all. I was like, whatever, this Facebook stuff is lame. But yeah, now it's doing better than Instagram, so. Just trying to cover all my bases, except for Twitter. I don't cover Twitter at all. I really suck at Twitter. I like log in. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't even try with Twitter.
I log in about once a month, and I'm like, oh, look, I still have 100 followers. Cool, bye. Peace out.
Yeah, no, it's just Twitter, you know, there are just so many. You can't keep up with all of them, especially if you're just like self-employed, you know, person, like contractor or whatever. But even, you know, even if it's a choice between just choosing between certain social media platforms, Twitter is always at the bottom of the list because of how toxic it is, more so than the other ones.
I'm definitely, it's on my goal list for 2021. My goal list for 2020, I already did. I wrote 3 books. That's fine. But for 2021, the Twitter, being nice to my Twitter is definitely on the list because I haven't been nice to my Twitter.
Yeah, that is just not a priority for me because even just being on BookTube and Bookstagram, like, it's almost comical the way everyone says that how toxic and dramatic and terrible that book Twitter is. And it's like, how can people get in such, like, venomous fights over books or, like, fiction?
Oh, I was going to say, I've seen that on all the platforms.
Yeah.
So. People get a little, you know, if they're very passionate about something, no holds barred, man. It's the internet.
Yeah. Anyway, so, next question. So far, which is your favorite collection of poetry and why?
I have a few, and it's kind of hard for me because I have 8 books. And I love all of them for very different reasons. But, I mean, obviously I love Petals of the Moon because it's my most popular one. I love Racing Ravens because I wrote that about my husband getting murdered.
Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss.
So it's about grief and loss.
Mm-hmm.
So it's some of my best writing. So I love that one. And I love Wildflower Tea because Wildflower Tea is like, it's my comeback kid. I released Wildflower Tea the fall before Petals of the Moon. It had a completely different cover. It had photography in it. Most of my books are sold in 2s. So Wildflower Tea goes with Petals of the Moon. Petals of the Moon is the dark half. Wildflower Tea is the light half.
Oh, okay.
So, like, Racing Ravens and Chasing Pines, Racing Ravens is the loss of love, and Chasing Pines is all about love. So they all go together. They're all in sets of 2s.
Mm-hmm.
So Wildflower Tea is the light book that goes with, that preceded Petals of the Moon. And that is by far, I think, that's my favorite collection out of all of them.
All right. Interesting. And this may differ, like, you know, that's your favorite collection. Like, is there a difference between which of your collections was the most enjoyable to work on and write?
My first one, hands down, just because I got to do all the cool photography.
yes, and then it was like, $20 a pop for all the fancy photography.
Each 2-page spread, like, I had to run it through 4 different art programs to get the desired effect.
Oh, dear.
It was such a labor of love, though, like, and that's why I'm like, I still release it every once in a while, but I take it off the shelves. Like, I'll take it off the shelves in January again, and maybe do like something special around my birthday when I released it the first time. I don't know. And re-release it for a few weeks, but it's just too expensive. Like, no one wants to spend $19 on a paperback book.
Yeah. It's, I remember with Ghost in the Locket, my debut poetry collection, I originally was planning on adding photography to it because I'm into photography, but very specific, like art photography, which, you know, I don't really consider myself that deep in the art world. I see it purely as a hobby, but I like to do what I call art photography, where I will run, like, photos that I've, you know, taken myself, and I'll use the Prisma app to, like, make them more, like, stylistically more like a painting, and then, like, change, like, tone, like, saturation, all sorts of things to have a very non-naturalistic look. And I was thinking of, you know, putting those photos in the collection, but it was my first time using KAP, and I'm just like, you know, it'll just be the poems for now, and if I can master that element of it later on, great, but for now, it's just the poems.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. I don't know, man. I want to do more photography books. Like, Mirror, Mirror has the same effect of my first book, I Am a Woman, Not a Winston, but it's black and white, and it's not on the fancy, nice paper. So, but it's fine, and but it has the same photography effect where it's like the photo, and then it runs into a graduated fog filter, and then there's the poem. So, and it covers a 2-page spread. And it was funny because, like, I'm running around, like, it's all fairy tale characters and fairy tale implements, and I'm running around, like, with the wig on the shores of Lake Michigan, like, taking the picture for Rapunzel, and, like, running around with apples in the forest to take picture for Snow White, and, like, it was just super fun to shoot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wonderful. So, next question. Are you working on anything in present you would like to share with your readers about? You did mention a children's book that you're keeping deliberately secretive. Is there anything else, really, you're working on at present?
Not really, just because I just released two.
Right, that makes sense.
So my mind is kind of mushy. And I'm like, okay, we're just going to kind of... That's plenty. Three books in 1 year, and for it being 2020, plenty.
For the dumpster fire that is 2020, that is great.
I mean, the first book, Chasing Pines, was released before the dumpster fire, so that's okay. But yeah, the last two was during the dumpster fire, and I'm good. I'm not anywhere near, maybe next summer, maybe next fall. I have some ideas floating around, but it's far off.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Alrighty then. And so, you know, kind of branching into the sort of whole poetry scene, both beyond in Instagram and beyond, do you think being a poet today is different from being a poet in the past?
I don't know, because I'm still not rich, and they weren't rich, so there's that. I feel like it's more, they seem to have more romanticized lives than I do. I think technology takes the little bit of romanticism out of being a poet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't just, yeah. I mean, I can just sit in a cafe with my typewriter and my notebook if I want, not today, because, you know, they're closed, but these days you can, but I used to do that when I lived further downstate. There was this local little pub. I would go sneak into the corner with my notebook and do observations on people and drink a pint of dark beer and just sit in the shadows and take notes. It was super cool and it was super fun, but,
I'm just seeing the author photo of you in the little corner with your dark beer, and that being on at the end of your book.
Yep, that was and it was fun and it was cool, but yeah, I really the transference from then to now, poetry in the past, I don't know, even 100, even 50 years is so, it's so strange, because we have our traditional published poets and poet laureates, then we have our Instagram poets, and are all voices created equal, I guess, I want to ask, because before it was only traditionally published poets.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we to judge this new form of poetry against classics when we are now dealing with several different medias to release poetry?
Right.
Because same thing with, you know, being a fine artist, you were a fine artist back then when you got commissioned by people with money to paint the art, or someone discovered you, or, you know, and that's very typical of all art forms, like other people telling you that you have it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's just a kind of a crazy, it's kind of a crazy time. It's super exciting because more and more people feel like they have the ability to control their own voice and do with what their art that they want to on their own. They don't have to wait for someone to publish them. They don't have to wait for someone to say, yes, create this. Yes, you are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's very freeing. And at the same time, very, I guess, I don't know. Social media kind of sucks in that way too, where they talk down to you if they don't like it. I'm in a lot of art groups and a lot of writing groups and on Facebook. And it's just, some of the people are so harsh when it comes to people's art and writing. It's like, wow.
Yeah, no, you should talk to my, I have a Gothic literature podcast, Sublime with Gothic, and my co-host is also kind of an artist, and she's, like, taken down her Instagram, like, specifically for her art a few times, because she just got so demoralized, because some people were just so mean.
They are harsh. Yeah. But, I mean, me coming from a visual arts teacher, especially K through 12, I would never, like, ever, like, do that to anybody. I always, like, I give a 5-star review to every single book I've ever purchased, because you know what? I can find something good to say in that review about that book.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not the best thing or not my style of what I personally like, I can find something good in that book to write a review about. Because
mm-hmm.
I know this person basically was super vulnerable to put this collection out, and I know how bad it hurts to get that awful review and have it break your heart. So I really try hard, and you know, I did the same thing for my students. Yeah, if they didn't follow all the rules, I, you know, kind of was a little harsh with them, but I don't care what it looked like. They put heart into it. They put passion into it. I do not want to break anyone's creativity, because maybe they're not there yet, but they will be if they keep working at it, but they'll never get there if they stop.
Right, exactly. Yeah, going back to the original question, like, yeah, poet today is different from poet of the past. I like to think, when I think of this question, I like to think that the core, like, you know, there's two elements of writing. There's the writing itself that you do by yourself, and then there's the nature, and then there's the exposure of it afterwards. And so I like to think that the first part, you know, the creating of it is pretty much the same, pretty much, you know, that same internal process. The only thing that's changed dramatically, again, is the nature of how that writing, once it's completed, enters the world via all the new technology and stuff. And again, I am a big advocate for self-publishing, because, like, I don't want to, you know, talk down to, like, traditional publishers who maybe don't take as many risks, because, you know, publishers, you know, they do, just for the sake of them sustaining themselves, they need to take the market into consideration. That's not a bad thing. But again, so I just feel like everyone should have the opportunity to, again, you know, put out what they want. And if people like it, okay.
I think, yeah, I was gonna say, I think there's more freedom in self-publishing, because you don't have to work with someone who's working for the crowd. Where they're going to say, okay, well, we're going to cut these 10 pieces that you absolutely love, because we don't think the market's ready for that.
Yeah.
I don't like that part of publishing at all. I think that self-publishing is amazing. I think it gives so much more freedom to people. And yeah, not everyone will like every piece that's in my books. That's great. But I like them.
Yeah, because, yeah, it makes me think of, have you seen the newest adaptation of Little Women?
No, I haven't. It's on my list.
Yeah, but it's really good. You should check it out. But what the director was saying in that is, you know, talking about the background of, you know, Louisa May Alcott writing that book. And, you know, her protagonist, Jo, ends up getting married at the end. Not to Lori, of course, but to someone else. But in the beginning, like, Louisa May Alcott, she was going to make Jo a spinster and just be like, no, she doesn't want to get married. That's not who she is. And her publisher forced her, or coerced her into giving her a husband to fit the social mores of the time.
Yep.
So,
well, I think it's good that self-publishing has come into a more level playing field with published, because at first self-published was not looked at as anything but hobby people doing things.
Or vanity stuff. Yeah.
And, now it's actually getting taken seriously. I mean, I made it on the Book Authority list of top 100 selling poetry books of all time, and I'm self-published.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So obviously it's not a joke. like it was in the beginning. Like, it was really hard. People were like, oh, you're self-published. You don't mean anything. You weren't picked by a publisher. And I'm like, that stigma's going to be around forever. It's just finally getting less and less.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting. You know, not that I agree with it, but it kind of makes sense in the in terms of novels and, like, longer prose like that. You know, I can kind of see. But self-publishing is just a huge part of poetry's history specifically. Like, Lord Byron could not get his poetry published originally in some of the places he wanted. So he's like, screw you, I'm going to do it myself. And he did.
Exactly. I mean, if we want to be real about it, poetry is not really the money maker for publishers, and never has been.
No.
It's such a small, small, small section of publishing companies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they want novels, they want, you know, they want
reference fiction, books.
They want nonfiction, they want reference books, they want school books, they want, like, and textbooks, they want everything else. But when it comes to poetry, they're not really, that's not where their budget is at.
No, it's not.
And they don't really care about you, because you're not selling a million copies of and being on the bestseller list and all this. Like, so yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, how many poets have sold a million copies of their book? One, maybe two.
Yeah, Ruby Core and them.
Yeah, that's it. Like, but how many novelists are out there that have sold over millions of copies of their book? Yeah, exactly. So we're not the big money makers for the publishing companies, so we'll never get treated equally.
Yeah. Although I like to think that maybe in the future, again, whether whether you look at it as good or bad, you know, just the nature of technology decreasing, you know, our attention spans, I think maybe in relate, maybe not causation, but a correlation to that is people might get into poetry more because it is a, even longer poems are just a shorter form of, you know, writing than, you know, the novel and articles and stuff like that.
I would hope that is the way things are going. I think it's going to take a very long time because publishing houses are pretty, you know, they have their, you know, what's it called? Their 10-year and 20-year projections set up already. So they don't, this will be a very, very, very gradual change.
Right.
It's not going to be, you know, that's not their business model, is to jump in and change the way they do things. It's not really how they traditionally work. So maybe they might try to add like one or two poets a year, see how it goes. Maybe the next year add another one, see how it goes. But I don't think we're going to have an overhaul of the system for some time. Because even some, like even a, what, 2 years ago, some poets were banging and like selling so many books, and now they're dwindled to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that poets also come in favor and leave the same way very quickly is also a stability problem.
Yep, and a sustainability problem.
So, yeah. I mean, we're pretty rare. We're on the chopping block at all times. It's fine. It kind of makes it exciting.
Yes, it indeed.
Being an artist is exciting. It should be exciting.
Indeed.
We never know what's going to happen next.
No, never. Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much for answering those questions for me. Would you like now to share your three selected poems with our listeners?
Absolutely. It's been fun talking. That was long to talk to anyone in the
wild. We had a wonderful discussion.
Okay, this is a piece from Racing Ravens, and my hands graze the Queen Anne's lace, white tops and fragrant blooms keep company along tracks once traveled. Sweet summer breezes bring the scent of youth gone by and memories of your eyes, how they searched my lips for that first kiss. Behind corn stalks we hid from farmers and brothers just to feel alive in our small lives. Along tracks once traveled, my hands graze, searching for memories of a once small life.
Beautiful. I love
Town Love.
Yeah, I love the description with the Queen Anne's lace.
It's one of my favorite flowers. When I was a kid, I hated it.
Why?
Because you pull it out and like the roots look like little weird green carrots and it stunk.
Yes, but yeah.
Just saying. Now I love it. It's one of my favorite flowers, but... And you'll get it. You get the reference because you're, you know, in the Midwest, so they're everywhere.
Yeah.
I think they are wild carrots or part of that family.
Part of the carrot family.
They are.
All righty then.
So that's like from Racing Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
This one is from Petals. So we'll see if you know this one. I thought I lost my purpose. I thought I lost my way. I gave a dollar change for a penny play. Breaking up windows, slamming doors. I forgot my purpose wasn't their way. I gave rage and heartache a brand new face when I lost every bit of assumed grace. On that dark day when the clouds came home, they expected a widow forlorn. When they assumed my fire would die, I slammed the door, but did not cry. For this fire within won't let me lie, won't let me sit, won't let me stay. It won't let me be less than I was before that day. The day you left, dropping breath away, in that moment I found my way. There is no map for the unseen, just our fire within and our will to breathe. I still have mine, it is not gone, it never left, well, at least for long. This heart still beats and it still loves with all the passion, right where it belongs, strong, on fire, and very much alive.
Ooh, I really like it. I love the imagery. I don't remember actually that one. I'll have to go back and review it, but I really love the imagery, like with the spider and of course the Black Widow trope, which actually I'm not originally from the Midwest, and I'm originally from Oregon, but again, also in Southern Oregon, like biggest spider you have to worry about are the Black Widows.
Right. Oregon's beautiful. I've been there a couple times.
Only in
Seattle, though.
Right. Yeah, no, I just remember there was one instance where a Black Widow wove its web, like, right next to the door, and I'm just like, what?
My old house that I had south by Detroit, it was beautiful. It was, like, this cute little 1910 bungalow. So adorable. Like, all hardwood, like, gorgeous house. The basement was filled with them. And I remember when I moved in after I bought the house, I was like, what do I do about this? And I called the exterminator and they were laughing at me. They're like, do you know the basement's really far away from the house? They're not going to come up there into the bright light and the warmth. They like it down there. Just be careful when you're downstairs. I'm like, okay. It was like legit their answer for me. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, it's
so. They're like, they're not going to rush up here in the night and go really fast and all attack you at once in your sleep. I'm like, okay, now you're just making me feel stupid.
Well, again, like, yeah, like they like really dark, secluded places, but still, that's your basement. You got to use it from time to time.
I know, they were laughing at me so hard. But I also used to live in Phoenix where, like, it was scorpions. That's like a way different story.
Oh my God. My husband is from Oklahoma. That's his home state. And so I went to visit, spend the summer with him, you know, at his family's house once. And like one of the first few nights we look at the ceiling and like there's a scorpion. And I'm like, what?
I can't do scorpions and I can't do rattlesnakes.
Yeah. We don't have rattlesnakes, you know, Midwest. There are plenty of them in Oregon. And in fact, I used to ride horses and I remember being on a horse in a field and I heard one and I'm just like, oh, crap.
Yeah, when I was living in Phoenix, I ran into a couple. It's not fun.
Yeah.
Not fun. No, thank you. I live in Michigan where there's nothing scarier than a black widow.
Yeah. Do you have, I don't know, Michigan's up north. Do you have any copperhead snakes?
Yeah, we do, but I haven't seen one yet.
Like, I live out in the boonies, like, in Indiana. Like, they're really prominent, and especially this year, they've been, like, all over. And it's, like, when my husband goes to, like, chop wood for the fire, and I'm just, like, always don't go in the summer. Do it, like, colder when they're not out.
I've only seen one snake so far this year, and it was a garter snake. So, but he was pretty big. He was, like, 6 foot long. I was like, okay, mister, you go your own way, because I don't like snakes at all, so.
Yeah. Alrighty then, would you like to share your last poem, please?
Yeah, this is from Wildflower Tea.
Nice.
Just a girl I was, never shown the way, pushed downstairs, landing flat on my face. I reeled and I rallied and I tried my best, but the universe had other plans for my pink dress. The boys, they looked but never swallowed. There was no hook, line, and sinker for this wildflower. Just a girl I was, never shown the way. I am forever grateful for landing flat on my face. For when I looked up, the stars were ready. Welcoming me as wild, no dress necessary.
Nice. I really like the imagery with the pink dress and, again, the sort of contrast of the masculine connotations versus feminine.
Definitely I'm a tomboy. I grew up, like, fishing, and my dad and mom were, like, hunters, and, like, I was always in the woods, and I'm like, yeah, I wasn't that little girl that was like, I need to get my hair done. I need to go shopping. I'm like all about thrift store. Like, yeah. See, I wasn't a girly girl ever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but it's interesting to have those conversations again, like, you know, between masculinity and femininity and what is forced and what is chosen, because I like to think, I wouldn't necessarily have described myself as a tomboy, and especially as I've gotten older, like, I am a sort of, like, girly girl. Like, I like, you know, I've grown to like artificial nails and stuff like that. But I still, again, I hike 7 miles in 2 hours
right.
in the country. Like, I'm not, just because I do girly things doesn't mean I'm a sissy.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, well, thank you so much for sharing those poems. You know, we've been talking quite a while, so I think I'll only read one of the poems I selected from your collection, Petals of the Moon. So let's see, it's on page 37, and it's called Clouds of Blue. My demons curl tightly around my thirst, begging to be quenched. My tranquil desert, but the stars, oh the stars, they shined in rain, shined so brightly upon this pain. Thirsty I was amidst the flood, amidst the life I lost in love. But still I sat among the pain, among the stars, among the rain. For I knew my wishes may come true if the stars could find the moon behind clouds of blue.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, no, I like it. I'm a sucker. I'm a pagan. I'm a sucker for, like, the imagery of moon, flowers, and naturalistic scenery. But I think what the rhyming meter just really gets me. It just flows so, like, perfectly. You know, one criticism. Not that I dislike and I myself also write, you know, non-rhyming poetry, that in some ways that can be harder because you're relying more on content than a specific like meter. But this one, Clouds of Blue, it's just done so well, and it just, you know, bum bum bum.
Thank Thank you. Yeah, I know a lot of people aren't into rhyming poetry, and I don't know. I like it because I always, when I write, I write out loud, if that makes sense. Like, I don't write it down first. I say it out loud, and that's how I compose, and then I write it down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always speaking out loud, and it has to have some kind of sound to it, or else I don't like it.
Right. Yeah, again, I kind of, I'm all over the place. I enjoy both rhyming and non-rhyming.
I enjoy reading both, yes. Writing, I like both too. I have both styles, but rhyming for me just sounds fuller in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you eat something and it tastes good, and then you eat something and it like gives you that full mouth feel, and you can tell the difference.
Right.
That's what I do when I write poetry. I'm like, just nope. I want the full mouth feel on this one. And some I choose to rhyme and get the full mouth feel instead.
Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much for sharing those poems with me. And again, just thank you for writing all the collections that you have. Again, your poetry is truly phenomenal.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm excited.
Of course. And now we can end the show with our little activity, hashtag InstaPoetry. So do you have your phone handy?
I do.
Okay. So you want to pull up Instagram.
Yep.
And just search for the hashtag InstaPoetry.
Okay, we got hashtag InstaPoetry.
Okay.
Hey, they changed it. You used to be able to choose recent or most.
Yes, you know, even after the election, like, Instagram, I guess they got enough, like, pressure is, like, they temporarily hidden the most recent tab to prevent the spread of possible false information and harmful content related to the election.
Interesting.
Yeah, so again, I would specifically do this exercise as most recent because I liked to, discover new poets and new talent, but they don't give me that option right now, so.
Well, they're just buttheads.
Yeah.
I understand why, though, so it's okay.
Like, I get it, why, but again, the election is over. Why, are they just waiting for Biden to be inaugurated?
January 20th. The world is going to change all of a sudden.
Yeah. Anyway, so again, it doesn't have to be the first one. You can just pick the one that first comes to your mind here. I'll start with, this is a poem from, what's the handle? Written by Shishi in Los Angeles. And there's a reason why you chose the paths you took. And there will be a reason why you'll choose the paths that you haven't yet taken. And despite where you are or where you're headed, simply trust that you're going to make it.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm kind of, like, I don't hate it, but I'm just kind of lukewarm about it.
It's fine.
Yeah, I just would have liked a little more creativity in imagery. Like, it's one thing I talk about a lot in this podcast, like, where do you draw the line between poetry and, like, inspirational quotes?
Right. Yes, I feel that in my soul.
Yeah.
Cuz yeah, I do put shorter pieces in my book for basically the photos for Instagram and social media to get more attraction to my book. So I have physical, but I also have tons of long pieces filled with imagery.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I'm also very nice about Instagram poets because I'm like, who knows what they're hiding in those notebooks at home? Who knows?
Yeah, no, again, this is true. And this may just be the one beginning of a very elaborate
poem. It could just be a very swipe-friendly piece.
Yeah, indeed. So, now you choose one.
Okay, we'll do one by Sabina Laura Poetry.
Oh, I just launched my, I just posted that one online.
I want to be unmovable like the mountains, yet always changing shape like the clouds. And on the days I can't decide, I choose both. I choose everything. That's pretty.
Yeah, I like it. And especially because, again, like we were talking, like, between tomboys and girly girls, like, there's so much, our brains try to simplify things, you know, we're wired to do that biologically and from an evolutionary perspective, but we don't always fit in these very specific molds or archetypes, and so I like the I choose both, because I'm going to do both of those things.
Exactly.
Alrighty then, and let me try and find another one. Let's see. This is by Feeling by Words. Maturity is when you realize that not everyone you love will stay. Not everyone you trust will be loyal. Some people only exist as examples of what to avoid.
Yeah, that's an inspirational quote.
Yeah, like I like it. I like the message. Everyone can relate to that. Again, I would have liked a little
Very,
more,
for sure.
would have liked to have a little more oomph in it.
I mean, and you know, I don't, I'm not knocking people that write inspirational words, not in the least, but
No,
to
not at
me,
all.
there's it just falls into a different category.
Yeah, like, you know, I remember being, you know, seeing people on Facebook like, oh, I hate all these like inspirational quotes, and I'm like, how jaded and grumpy are you that that a cute saying and a cutesy photo pissed you off?
Exactly.
Alrighty then, would you like to pick another one?
Ah, here we go. I got one from Zachary Douglas.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes. I'll drown you in flowers if you let me. You deserve to be told how often, told often how supreme and immense you are. You deserve to be told how you not only make the sun shine brighter, but you are the sole reason its rays find me on any given day. I'm beginning to believe in my scars and why they ended up here in the first place. If you don't already know already, I've been yours since you said hello to me. You've been my favorite feeling ever since. I only know extremes. I never want to breathe without you being the reason why.
Oh, I love that one.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah, and like drowning in flowers again,
I was gonna say
using.
he's what I've noticed about his writing, he's a very good 50-50. He does good messages, he does inspiration, and he also does pretty good imagery.
Right, yeah.
But it's
And then
not
the
like,
fact that.
I was gonna say, it's not like it's so far out of context, out of the box imagery. It's very, very friendly imagery.
Yeah, and again, using something very common like the sun, but I liked, you know, kind of the twist he does of like, you are the reasons the rays find me. Like, that is a little bit
Right.
of original, and I appreciate that. Yeah. Alrighty then, I will choose one more, and this is word Q. And what's the saddest word in the English language? Almost. Why? I was almost good enough. He was almost in love with me. She almost survived. We almost made it.
Yeah,
Yeah, I like that.
that's pretty
I
good.
like that one because I think I can relate to that. You know, I've been happily married for several years now, but back when I was dating, it was kind of weird where, you know, I would definitely feel that sentiment of I would rather a guy not like me at all and just not find me attractive than just be like, oh, you're only good enough to like date casually and like crap like that.
Right. Yeah, being almost anything or almost anywhere is like almost is very very hard place to be. So yeah, very relatable. It's nice taking a word that's not used very often. Nice to see that it being used in that context.
Right.
That's good.
Alrighty then, and that concludes our episode of Insta Poetic Justice. Thank you so much for joining me, Cheryl.
Thank you. I had fun.
I know it was, I think we had a wonderful conversation talking about the ins and outs of the poetry sphere, both in and beyond Instagram.
That is, yeah, it's fun. I love it. I love it. I can't wait to hear all the other episodes. I'm excited.
Yes, alrighty then. So tune in next time, everyone, where we will tackle another Insta poetry giant with another poet. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye.
Bye.
That was the Sophia Mayer Studios podcast.